Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, it is another happy hour. I tell you, we have had a tremendous week this week. I tell you, I picked up another set of TIs. Now we have a total of four, and I will not put them all together, because I will try to do what I can, and I have warned them that I will not tolerate any of that bickering and that fighting. I won't handle it. I will not deal with it. But also, the city of Benton Harbor is having the election this Tuesday. It is crucial that we win this election. I've been working on this thing for the last month, trying to get it right. We have the people power, but we do not have the financial power. But that don't stop me. To me, money is not everything. You need it in order to really execute your program. But we will continue to fight this battle. We must pass this income tax, this city income tax. The reason why, 70% of the people that lives in Benton Harbor are unemployed or either on fixed income. 90% live below the poverty level. 98% of the people that work in Benton Harbor do not live in Benton Harbor. We plan on taxing them. We're going to make them pay for using our roads. We're going to make them pay for coming into our community and taking their money elsewhere. We got a great chance. But once again, the corporations are using their financial dollars to try to influence the residents of Benton Harbor. I know they don't understand. They're being led by these ministers. I call them hoodlum ministers. But we're still going to beat them down. Our school system are in shambles. It's ridiculous that they no longer want to educate the students. I'm going around now with a thing: save our children. Do not allow the school system, that's just not in Benton Harbor, that's just not in Detroit, that's all over the country. They do not want to educate our children. And we're sitting back doing nothing, as usual. Everybody is afraid of the government. I tell you this much. Just continue to be afraid of the government. You will be behind those barbed wire fences, eating that nasty food. They really no longer need the people. Your government is controlled by the 1%. They tell Obama what to do. They dictate to you what you should watch on TV. They control the news media. They do all these things, and we allow it to happen. We have to cut that TV off and be able to decide what's good and what's bad. But I will no longer tolerate it. We are going to fight this mess until the end. We are going to continue to stand up for what is right. We will not allow our community to be destroyed. We will not let the federal government, we will not let the local government, we will not let these people destroy our city. The theme is save our children. We must fight for the future. We must deal with what's happening in our city. That means everybody, not just some people. That means every single person. You have to stand up and fight. And if you don't fight, eventually they are going to come after you. It's just a matter of time. So those of you who are out there who think that you're going to sit home and do nothing, you got another thought coming. Come on, let's listen to a little Martin Luther King. Let's see what Martin Luther King had to say. Martin Luther King, I was hungry and you fed me not. We must take care of each other. It's a war out there. It's a war at your front door. It's a war at your back door. It's a war inside your home because they're coming, whether you like it or not. Those of you out there who don't believe that they're coming for you, just keep living. We are in a war, and we better start fighting. I have a very, very special guest today, Mr. Sam Thurman. He's going to tell your story, and he's going to need our help. So those of you who are out there who don't like to help, don't like to make calls, then you're listening to the wrong show. We help people. My good friend Ralph Porner and Lynn Stewart, we need to help them. I got another group of TIs that's going to be working with us. They say there's over 3,000 of them. So I have a job to do, and you have a job to do. And those of you out there, we need your help. And I want everybody to take a stand. But I'm going to bring on some people who can and will stand up for what's right. I'm going to bring on Mr. Sam Thurman. Mr. Thurman, are you there?
I am, Reverend Pinkney. How you doing this afternoon?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thank you very much for having me on the program to talk about the case of the IRP-6 and to talk about A Just Cause, our organization.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I'm really very, very excited to have you on today and also get a chance to see what we can do to help with this matter, because I've been reading about it, and I got a chance to read the transcript of what the Mr. Zappo, is that how you pronounce his name?
Zappolo.
How do you pronounce his name?
Zappolo, one of the IRP-6.
Zappolo, absolutely. I was reading a transcript, what he said when he got up there. It almost brought tears to my eyes, because by him being a Caucasian, and he was actually talking about how black people, he didn't seem like he cared very much about what the judge did to him. He was more concerned about what the judge was going to do to these black guys. And,
exactly. And
it really, really, really brought tears to my eyes. And I'd like for you to tell me, first of all, tell me about your organization. Let's talk about that first so people know exactly who you are.
Well, Reverend Pinkney, A Just Cause is a volunteer organization. We were established in 2005, and basically we were set up as a result of this case that you and I are going to be talking about here in a moment, the IRP-6 case. And because of the fact that these six gentlemen, they found themselves being indicted, being prosecuted, tried, and wrongfully convicted for something that was for just conducting regular business. They didn't do any wrong, and right now they have been sitting in federal prison for the last 14 months. As far as the overall time, the time that was between, sentencing and conviction and all that kind of stuff, they actually spent additional time as well. So altogether, they've spent 25 months engaged in this whole mess. So A Just Cause was set up as just like you were talking about at the top of your program. We were set up to fight against the criminalization of things that, you and I might do as a course of normal business. And like you were saying, I was listening in to the top of the program, if you don't get involved, they will come knocking at your door. And one of the things that we stress all the time in our organization is that we were naive to the processes to put it in terms of like you would maybe in the pulpit, we were naive to their devices. But once you know the devices and you don't share that with others, then, people are getting set up. And people need to know that just because it's not happening to you today does not mean that it won't happen to you or someone that you love. And so that's what A Just Cause was set up to fight against was this kind of stuff. The IRP-6, David Banks, Clinton Stewart, Gary Walker, Dave Zappolo, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, they were actually instrumental in setting up this organization, because when they first got engaged in this whole mess, they realized that there's a lot of crooked stuff going on, and then they realized that it was not only happening to them, but you will find other cases out there where there is wrongdoing, miscarriage of justice, judicial misconduct, so we need to expose that anywhere we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it appears to me it's like it's so much stuff here that's so amazing that, after reading that stuff, it's hard for me to even imagine that this is happening here in the United States. But I know how the federal government works. Matter of fact, I have a good friend, Ralph Pointer, and his wife, Attorney Lynn Stewart. He's going to be on the show later. He's also his family is a victim. Well, I don't know whether we should call him a victim, because I think that kind of like gives them what they're trying to do. See, they want you to become a victim, because when you're a victim, it's hard for you to fight back, and I think
right. That's
what it was. Let me tell you this much. I want you to tell us, I'm going to give you enough time to talk, because I think people need to know this story. Can you start at the very beginning so people can understand how serious this matter is? Can
sure.
you do that for me?
Yep. I can do that. Yeah, I can lay the foundation for you. And, you know, and just in the case that I know we have a short time here, but there's a website where folks can go to and get a lot of information about this. It's that we set up a website specifically for the IRP6, and it's at www.freetheirp6.org. Again, www.freetheirp6.org. And then you can also go to a Just Cause at a-justcause.com, a-justcause.com. So, Reverend Pinkney, this is a federal court case that, and like you said, when you start reading about it, it just blows you away. And it's like, what? Well, you know, people will say, you know, well, who are the IRP6? Well, the IRP6 are IT professionals. They had started a IT company, a software development company, and it was a startup company. Just like any other startup company, you know, you ask friends and family to kick in and help to so you can get your business off the ground. They did nothing, no different than anybody else. The company was started in 2003 by Gary Walker. Well, in 2003 also, you're talking a brand new company. Well, the federal government was in dire straits because, you know, we had just been 2 years past the tragedies of 9/11 in New York. Well, the Department of Homeland Security was set up, and they, the 9/11 Commission basically said that one of the problems that led to 9/11 was the fact that federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies had no way of really communicating with each other as far as sharing information and collaborating on that information. Well, Gary Walker was the CEO of IRP Solutions Corporation, and he developed a software called the Case Investigative Lifecycle Software, and we use the acronym SILC. So it's C-I-L-C, but it's pronounced just like the fabric, SILC. The Department of Homeland Security heard about this company and heard about this software, and they contacted IRP Solutions and said, we understand that you have something that we need to see. They did an online demo and saw that, and then they said, we need you to come to Washington, D.C. And so, Reverend Pinkney, the reason I can speak firsthand to this is that I was actually a part of IRP Solutions Corporation as well. I was the vice president of sales and marketing. I was the one that received the phone call from the Department of Homeland Security. So, you know, people will be, you know, folks, sometimes they like to do a little fact-checking, and they want to second-guess you and say, yeah, right, the Department of Homeland Security contacted them. Yeah, right, the Department of Homeland Security did, in fact, contact us. We went to Washington, D.C. In this meeting was the Department of Homeland Security, other members of the Department of Justice. You had the FBI there, the Federal Air Marshals, Secret Service, TSA, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I like to refer to them as the alphabet soup of federal law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Gary and David Banks. David Banks was the CEO, COO of IRP Solutions. I always say they hit it out of the park. The demo that they put on there drew great reviews from the Department of Homeland Security to the point that we were invited back on several occasions to do other demos and to do online demos. Well, the federal government said, can you modify your software to do a couple of other things? Can you put a federal face on it? In order to accommodate the request of the federal government, Gary and David and IRP Solutions basically engaged the services of staffing companies, not just someone who you say, well, we need someone to answer the phone on Friday, but these were IT professionals who could come in and help to modify the software, help to test the software. Well, you know, the federal government doesn't move quickly. So here, you know, the company is thinking that you're really close to business closing because of the fact the Department of Homeland Security has said, we're setting you up on a $12 million pilot project. The federal government also asked for a quote for one piece of the software, not the entire thing up front. They just asked for one piece of the software. That piece was going to cost them $100 million. That was $100 million in revenue that was due to, that would have come to IRP Solutions once, you know, after going through negotiations and going through the bidding process and so forth. But there was every indication that IRP was well suited for that. Reverend Pinkney, right now that software is worth 4 to 5, or if not 10 times more than that. If the federal government had looked at the entire product that IRP had developed, you would have been looking at over $1 billion. Now, one thing I want to point out is the fact that because business didn't close as quickly, IRP got behind on paying bills, and that's when a couple of the staffing companies accused us, the company, of running a scam, which there's nothing further from the truth. I mean, if they had just been patient and not engaged and call in favors and got a federal prosecutor in Denver by the name of he's an assistant U.S. attorney by the name of Matthew Kirsch. You have a former assistant U.S. attorney who works for a law firm in Denver who hand-carried a package to Kirsch and said, you need to go after these guys with this, 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 and this. And then you got an FBI agent by the name of John Smith who executed a raid that was not based on any fact and raided IRP Solutions in 2005. All of this got kicked off by a lady by the name of Susan Holland, who was one of the presidents of one of the staffing companies, and she threatened IRP and said, if you don't pay me, I know people in the federal government, and I'm going to bring down IRP Solutions, and I'm going to destroy your lives, and I'm going to destroy the lives of people around you. So like you said at the top of the program, it may not have happened to you yet. Just keep living. You will be doing business like anybody else or just conducting your normal family business, and someone will try and criminalize what you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, and what you said is so amazing, and just to think that they can come in. And remember this, the FBI can drum up a case on anybody. You know, you think that you're exempt from this. You're not. People don't understand what the FBI do. Even the Lynn Stewart case is so incredible. You should read about that. That is, but that's what they do. But here's what I would like to do. I like to show them that we can fight back against them. You see, this is what we have to do to show them. We have to start calling their office, and you'll get me like, okay, we have over 700,000 people that tuned into this show last week. And I'm expecting more this week because I put it out there that you would be on there along with Lynn Stewart, husband Ralph Pointer. I made sure that people understand how important it is. So I'd like to know, now we talked a little bit about each and every one of them. Were you there during the sentencing of this trial?
Was I there during the sentencing?
Yeah, was you there?
I was there doing parts of the trial, and then also, for sentencing, I was there, and that is something that, we actually have a radio show as well that we talk about this and other wrongful convictions, but that's something that we actually just talked about in this past week's show. And Reverend Pinkney, that's something I wouldn't wish on anyone, to go through that type of humiliation. When you see how they bring out the chains and they shackle people as if they are animals or slaves, and there was this just this vindictiveness on the part of Judge Arguello. Now, this is a federal judge, that committed so many errors during this trial. And by the way, the case is up for appeal, and it's very strong points that are up for appeal. But this judge omitted 200 pages of transcript, which would easily exonerate the IRP 6. And she says it in the last day of trial that the IRP 6 asked. They said, Judge, there's this sidebar that we had. You violated our Fifth Amendment right. So that's one of the things. She violated their Fifth Amendment right. But the part of the trial transcript that would show where that happened, she omitted it. And so that's one of the things that we, as a Just Cause, we actually filed a lawsuit against the court reporter, Darlene Martinez, and which also is going to implicate Federal Judge Christine Arguello. Reverend Pinkney, you're probably familiar with the name Mark Garagos,
yes,
attorney Mark Garagos out of Los Angeles. We have him as part of our team. As a matter of fact, we just had a conference call this afternoon to discuss parts of the case. Also, there is an attorney in Denver by the name of Cornell Johnson, who actually initiated the lawsuit on behalf of a Just Cause. So the things that Judge Arguello did from a vindictive standpoint, she sits there on the bench, and she makes statements like, you know, I have your life in my hands. I mean, she's sitting there as if she's God or something, and then she hands down these sentences of 7 to 11 years. And, you know, one of the things, now all the guys didn't get sentenced on the same day. So, you know, they refused them to be out on bond pending appeal, saying that they were a flight risk. Well, if they were a flight risk, they would have fled well in advance of being sentenced, because the sentencing spanned over at least a two-week period, I think. So by the time, you know, you got to number 6, he already knew that she was handing down sentences and taking them into custody immediately, and she was handing down sentences like 7 to 11 years. These men are ethical businessmen. They're family men. They're Christian men. None of them had a record at all, and to this day, A Just Cause still maintains that they still don't have a record because they never did anything wrong. They got convicted of wrongdoing, but as far as them actually doing something wrong, the evidence does not show that they did anything wrong.
And listen, Sam, one of the things that I was reading, that they all 6 of them terminated their attorneys. That
they
is
did.
Very, very unusual for 6 attorneys to be terminated, even though they were public defenders. Is that correct, or was any of them paid lawyers?
No, they were public defenders, and the problem there is that they were just trying to offer up the IRP-6 on a silver platter to the assistant U.S. attorney. As a matter of fact, there were various conversations that we found out later that had occurred. Actually, we found out before the guys fired their attorneys, that's part of why they fired them, is that Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch was having conversations with the public defenders and basically saying, your guy is the guy to flip. You know, he's the one that's going to flip. And so he begins to try and orchestrate this case that would try and make the guys flip on each other. Well, you can't flip on somebody if you didn't do anything wrong. And like you said, reflecting back on Dave Zerpolo's testimony or his statement at sentencing, where Dave is a brother that we love. I mean, all of us actually go to the same church as well. And Dave, he understands, even though he's a white man, he has seen the injustice and the racial tension and the racial inequities that can occur. But then when he was caught up in this particular situation, he even said even more so, because he could easily see that it was blatant discrimination and blatant racism. We believe to this day that Dave got caught up in it because of the fact that Dave even defended them. Here's something you might not have known. Dave defended them in a grand jury. Where there were 2 grand juries in this case, Reverend Pinkney, which again is a gross injustice. The first grand jury got it right. They came back and said, this is a corporate debt collection case. Why are we even reviewing it? There's no crime here. There's nothing criminal here. It's a company that owes debt. They did not come back with an indictment. Part of that included Dave Zerpolo going into the grand jury, taking evidence, which people say they hadn't heard of that before. Dave actually took evidence into the grand jury and actually asked the grand jurors, hey, I have information here that would show that these guys weren't doing anything wrong. The grand jury took that information. They came back without it and did not indict. Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch convened a 2nd grand jury. He only called 1 witness, and that witness was an FBI agent. They got an indictment. Does that something stink about that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Hey, is that the FBI agent that also worked with the company, or was that another FBI agent?
No, that was an FBI agent that was actually involved in the raid. Now, to your point, so that your listeners understand, that even more so substantiates the fact that IRP was a legitimate business conducting a legitimate business, developing viable software. IRP had retired federal agents working in the business to help modify the software per the request of the Department of Homeland Security. You know, when they said, hey, modify it, well, David, he began to find, you know, folks who could assist in that. So you had retired federal agents who were actually working in the business. Now, here's one thing on that. The FBI, actually, before they raided the business in February 2005, they started kind of going around questioning folks. Well, they knew that these agents worked there. They questioned one of them by the name of Gary Hilberry. Mr. Hilberry was a retired Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent, had over a 20-year career. He was a supervisor as a federal law enforcement officer. He provided a sworn affidavit stating that IRP is a legitimate business. IRP has legitimate prospects with the Department of Homeland Security, NYPD, and other large law enforcement agencies. And myself and two other retired federal agents are working here free of charge until this software sells, because we know that it's going to sell, and we want to, you know, be a part of that. Agent Smith, the guy who executed the raid, he even went to Washington, D.C. Agencies in Washington, D.C. at that time were even validating the fact that IRP was legit and IRP was conducting legitimate business. Reverend Pinckney, Agent Smith, the guy who executed the raid, he got a judge to sign off on a warrant stating that IRP was purportedly developing software. So in so many words, he was stating that IRP was a front organization, was not conducting legitimate business, and did not have a viable product. And he got a judge to sign off on that. They raided IRP in February 2005 with over 20 armed agents came in. The company only had about 15 employees at the time. They put the business on lockdown. They herded all the African-American employees into the cafeteria, held them there. The raid team was at IRP for over 10 hours. The warrant also said that they were looking for financial records. They did not take financial records. They began to copy all of the data off of all of the computers, which makes us believe and makes other people believe that they were looking to steal the software.
And you know what? Zippo, he and his when he went before the judge, matter of fact, he said that in his pleading. Oh, that was, I mean, what he said, they treated him, they told him to go into the cafeteria all by himself. Then he went and got himself out of his office and walked out of the place, and they stopped all the black people.
That is right. They did not. Dave Zappolo, he was able to move around in the building at will without any escort. All of the African-American employees were in the break room with a armed agent at each door. If anyone even wanted to go to the bathroom, they were escorted to the bathroom. When Dave got ready to leave, they just said, okay, they handed him a business card and said, Mr. Zappolo, if you need to get in contact with us to share any information, just give us a call. They let him leave with his backpack, his briefcase, did not stop him at all. Dave could have been taking, you know, the Queen's treasure out that door. They didn't even stop him. An African-American got ready to leave. Once they allowed them to leave, they stopped them, called them back, or escorted them back to the front desk. And we actually have security video footage showing all of this. They escorted them back to the front desk. The ladies, they were going through their purses. They were going through their briefcases and their bags. The men, they were escorting them back and going through their wallets. One of my dear friends, who was also part of IRP and is my co-host on our show, Cliff Stewart, they escorted him back in and went through his wallet. It's like, what are you looking for in my wallet? My wallet has nothing to do with a search warrant where you're supposed to be coming to this company looking for financial records. And so, you know, some folks have actually said that that amounts to wrongful imprisonment. And so, you know, they crossed the line in so many ways. And when you look at Judge Arguello, the manner in which she conducted herself in this whole trial is atrocious. And by the way, she actually presided over a previous case where the sister of one of the IRP six, they brought her up on charges to try and make the guys flip. Now, they trumped up charges on her and convicted her of perjury. And Judge Arguello, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, presided over that same case. And then Judge Arguello presides over the IRP six case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch presides over the IRP six case. That is just totally, totally out of control. But the system is so corrupt in that the judge, you go before the judge to file a motion and say, will you recuse yourself? because of your previous involvement in this case. Well, the judge is ruling in our in her own behalf. That is a problem that needs to be fixed in our federal judicial system. How are you going to preside over something where someone is saying, I don't like what you did, and what you're doing is questionable and possibly even crooked, so we're asking you to step off, and it's like, no, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I'm going to stay on this case. Something's wrong with that.
Sam, you know, one thing I learned about this system, if we don't tell them what they're doing is wrong, in their mind, in their heart, they believe that what they're doing is the correct thing, especially to us. So, see, more people have to stand up. Until they do that, Sam, it's going to continue this way. But listen, I am with you 100%, Sam, and I plan to fight this federal government as hard as possible to get justice for the six. And I tell you this much, you got about 2 minutes now to say whatever you want, but every week I'm going to give you a platform where you can come on for about 10 minutes and give us a update, tell us what's going on. So keep this in people's mind, and I want you to tell people what they can do to help, because it's too many people out there that's not doing nothing because they think it's never going to happen to them. Believe me, if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. This is the type of life I live, and I know the type of life I live. But yet and still, I always have problems because I will not bow down to them. They don't scare me. They don't intimidate me. And I'm telling you, I'm committed to this fight. And, and sometimes it's going to have to be casualties. I'm here. But, Sam, you got a couple of minutes. Say what you want. Tell me what you want people to do and tell them how they can help you. And don't forget to give them a number that they can call, and let's take it from them. You got the flow, Sam.
Okay, thanks, Reverend Pinckney. We have an 800 number where you can call us at 855-529-4252, 855-529-4252. And, again, we have a website, a-justcause.com, and then we also have another website for the IRP6 called freetheirp6.org. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook at ajustcauseco. And then also we have a calling campaign. When you're talking about calling them at their offices, we have a calling campaign where we're calling Attorney General Eric Holder. You know, Eric Holder is talking about all these reforms that he's bringing about or want to bring about in the federal government. Well, call them and tell them that what's happening with the IRP-6 is not right and that he needs to look into it. He needs to launch an investigation into what's going on in the federal court system in the federal prosecutor's office in Denver. Eric Holder's office number is 202-514-2003. Also, if you have any contacts, and when I say you, I'm talking to anyone out there in the listening audience, have contacts with congressmen who can assist in launching an investigation from the Judiciary Committee perspective, give us a call again at 855-529-4252, 855-529-4252. We need the 200 pages that Judge Arguello omitted and that court reporter Darlene Martinez participated in omitting them. We need those released so that the guys can have so they can perfect their appeal. And Reverend Pinckney, I'll close out by saying, I was listening to the piece that you were playing as far as Dr. Martin Luther King, and, he has, and everyone's familiar with it, where he says injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And then I also have another one that I like to use, and it's Bishop Desmond Tutu. And he says that if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side with the oppressor. So, again, if you're neutral in situations of injustice, you've chosen the side of the oppressor. And that plays right into what you're saying, Reverend Pinckney. You can sit on the sidelines and do nothing. Well, if you do nothing, you may as well be on the other side.
Absolutely, Sam. That is tremendous. And I tell you, I do have a few connections with the House members. Matter of fact, I'm going to be in Washington in December with a group of TIs that has asked me, which is targeted individual. If you hang on the show at 6 o'clock, we have what we call our TI moment with the TI target individuals, and I have picked up my fourth group of them, and this one is probably the largest group that I ever had, and I'm going to be working very, very closely with them. And there's some also in Denver, some of these TIs that I can probably connect you with, but I do have a connection with these House members that I think that we may be able to sit down and talk, but I think my visit this time going to be strictly about target individuals when I get there, and we'll see what they say. They normally don't mind talking, but will they do anything? That's another thing, but I got one obligation, one job to do. That's to give them the information. That's what I do.
I appreciate it, Reverend Pinkney. I appreciate you taking time and giving us time on your program to share with the listening audience. And I'll pass this on to the IRP6 and let them know the support that you have given and the support of your organization. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And this is just the beginning. Also, something specific that you want me to place on my blog, I will put it on my blog for you, which is one of the reasons why so many people listen to our show. They go to my blog and listen to the show. They do everything they because they don't know what I might say. And
well, I tell you what, I'm going to have Olivia reach back out to you.
I love the people, and I want to make sure that we get every inch of what we rightly deserve. But listen, don't leave me, Sam. I want you to hang on and just listen to some of the callers. And and also, if you still be around at the end of the show, which is it doesn't go off until 7 o'clock, I'll let you have the last 5 minutes.
I'll hang out with you.
All right then, my brother. Listen, we'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Now it's time for my good friend, my guy from New York. He might talk a little funny, but he's still my friend. He's the man. I love him very, very much. Rap Point, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinkney, and listening to every word. And thank you for what you do, for who you are. And I'm going to get into that just in just a moment. But I was just listening to Martin Luther King's speech where you played, that he talked about stand the test of history. And listening to the IRP6 because I'm in New York. I know Gary Walker as a radio personality, but I would like to hear more. I will call to find out more about that. And when he was talking about the FBI raiding officers, and well, you know, they raided the office of Lynn Stewart, and when they did, they showed pictures in the newspaper and on the television of the FBI walking out of her office with computers, et cetera. And guess what? There was nothing on the computers.
Mm.
But they used the media to show the people taking, the FBI taking computers out of Lynn Stewart's office to implicate or to suggest that she had done something wrong. But then they never said, well, we were in the office searching all day long and there was nothing there. They never said that, but people thought. And then the media began saying Lynn Stewart was guilty of sending secret messages. There was never a message. But once they put that in the minds of people, and the reporter told me he couldn't get a story in about Lynn Stewart unless he put in secret messages. And now, to Mr. Snowden, we know the truth. They have everything. They've been collecting information, telephone, phone calls for 10 years. We know that. What we had believed, we didn't know for a fact. And now we know for a fact they have every message ever sent. Yours, mine, and everybody else's too. And guess what? There are no messages. And if nothing comes out of this program but this reality, is that they say certain things exist that do not exist. And this is why they're after Mr. Snowden, because they know that there were no secret messages. There was a public press release that Lynn Stewart made regarding dictator of Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, who the people threw out and put in jail, and the United States went in, supported the military, and took him out of jail. The United States supports dictators. They lie constantly about democracy. And I tell everybody, you don't have to go to Egypt to know about the Americans lying about democracy. All you have to go to is Haiti. Bertrand Aristide got 74% of the vote, and the U.S. Marines took him out of there by bayonet and sent him to South Africa, to African nations, all planned. And he was the elected official. And we also have to go back in a little bit of history. But we don't have to go overseas to look at the myth of democracy. We just have to look here in the United States. And it was 1965 before black people in America got the vote. Fannie Lou Hamer and the Freedom Democratic Party that wanted to be seated in the South to replace the Dixocrats who would literally throw you off the land as a sharecropper if you dared say vote. And finally, they went through the beatings and the terror. That's from 1865 to 1965, 100 years to get the vote. And they denied black folk to vote. And so we have to say it is other people's fault, but where was everybody when we were fighting for the right to vote, when Fannie Lou Hamer was fighting for the right to vote, when the Freedom Riders were going south to sit in restaurants, but they were supporting black people's right to vote, and they were beaten and put in jail, etc. And yet we have people talking about democracy. And out of this movement for democracy came Eric Holder and Obama. And I want to remind everyone who's listening, when Obama decided to run for president and he went to the Black Caucus and Conyers, who was head of the Black Caucus, and he said, I want your support. When Conyers asked him, you've come to us for support, and do not allow this conversation to believe that I am a supporter or a believer in the Black Caucus. I'm just pointing out a situation that happened. When Obama went before the Black Caucus to ask for their support so that he could run in the Democratic Party for president, to run to be the candidate for the Democrats to run for president, and they say, ask him, well, it is strange of you to come before us to ask for our support when you never supported any of the issues of civil rights and human rights that we talked about. Obama's answer was, and I don't like to give my answer or my interpretation, I'm going to quote Mr. Obama. Mr. Obama said he did not want to be tainted by the excesses of the civil rights movement. This movement that enabled him and Eric Holder to become president, he didn't want to be tainted by it. And when ex-Attorney General Ramsey Clark went to Washington to speak on behalf of Lynn Stewart, to go to the Oval Office, Eric Holder and President Obama, and I asked him, how were you received, Mr. Attorney, ex-Attorney General Ramsey Clark? And his answer was, they didn't receive me, I received them. And I says, how so, Mr. Clark, ex-Attorney General? And his answer was this. I sat in the Oval Office in the same place that I sat and had the conversation with Lyndon B. Johnson, ex-president of the United States, and I as Attorney General. And I recounted our conversation in my voice and in the voice of then-President Lyndon B. Johnson. And I told them what had happened when Lyndon B. Johnson instructed Ramsey Clark to take the National Guard and integrate the schools in the South, Little Rock, Arkansas. And he was speaking on behalf of Lynn Stewart, a woman who was so active in the Black, Latino, and poor communities of America, and it, which included white people, and Lynn Stewart is a person of European extraction, German, Swedish, English, and Irish. And when he explained this to them, I told my daughter, get the suitcase packed because I'm going to go pick up Lynn, because no one who could hear that story and know the importance of this story, whether they were for or against integration, it was a major part of American history. It changed things in many ways and kept things the same in many ways. But I had assumed after Eric Holder and Obama having heard this story, they would free Lynn Stewart immediately, and we're going to get back into the case of Lynn Stewart. And as you know, Lynn Stewart is still in jail. We know about injustices. And there are so many cases, I guess I could start talking now and go on to next week when it's time for you to come back on, and I cannot cover them. But Lynn Stewart never passed a secret message to anyone. Snowden has told us that they recorded everything. You have never heard a secret message because there never was a secret message. And yet there are many of your listeners and everyone else's listeners out there who support Mr. Obama. And we know that democracy is now and always has been a lie. And so let's get to the major thing, this idea of not getting involved until it happens to me. This is the problem with many people in America. They don't get involved until it happens to them. And I will tell you, it is going to happen to them now. They're selling off of libraries. Right now, right as I speak to you, Reverend Pinckney, public libraries are being sold to private institutions. They're selling off of schools. Public schools are being sold. Selling off all of the properties people own that they paid for with taxes. They're selling it off to private industry or private property for pennies on the dollar. And the projects where people live are being sold off. And I could get into that because you and I know that the building codes of the 60s in the 50s are different than building codes today. Those projects were built so beautiful, many of them. Of course, there was a lot of robbery in those projects. But many of the projects were built, and I know about projects in New York City because I lived in projects in New York City. And when you went out to organize, even though it wasn't happening to me, I went out to organize. I was not fearful for my children who were home because the buildings could not burn. And in all of the buildings, they would say, if there is a fire, do not use the elevator. Stay in your building and close the door, because they were fireproof. And when people would start fires in the hallways or in the stairwells, they would just burn in the stairwells. And you could be right beside the stairwell and not get burnt. try that with a building, code today. And so I'm saying all of the things that you had said, Reverend Pinckney, all of the things that we have heard that the gentleman was talking about have been going on for a long time. And I have gone on demonstrations to help people who were the victims of police injustices, and the families didn't want me to get involved. Be nice, Ralph. And now we are in a day and age, in a period in history of people of our community, and the question, the only question is, how much is your child worth? They kill a child in the street. They kill them on the transportation, on the BART system, you know. And they, what do? They call Jesse Jackson, and Jesse Jackson gets a lawyer and goes, and they say, what is your child worth? Amadou Diallo. It goes on and on and on. And it went on yesterday. It is going on today. It will go on tomorrow. And I say, all of the children are mine, and they are invaluable. We cannot tolerate this kind of situation. And this is what I'm talking about today. There are numbers that were given to you to call, and you're talking about going to see Representative Conyers. Well, we have to do that. We're long overdue. Lynn Stewart is dying in jail, and her crime is this, and I want everyone to listen very carefully. Why is Lynn Stewart in jail? Because Lynn Stewart is in jail because when she was asked by Ramsey Clark to defend the blind sheikh, Lynn Stewart came across information with cross-examination of the informant. And understand, Emad Salem was an informant used on three different so-called, we have to thank Elijah Muhammad for this term, so-called terrorist acts. He set them up. He involved dupes who couldn't get from A to B, who could not negotiate the subway system of New York if you gave them the money. I'm talking about dupes. Involved them, and then called it a terrorist case. There were no terrorist cases, and when Lynn Stewart was cross-examining Emad Salem, remember this, everyone, when she was cross-examining Emad Salem, she came upon the reality that the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation knew about World Trade Center 1 before it happened. And I want everyone to listen to this carefully. Lynn Stewart said, Mr. Salem, did you tape record the FBI? Mr. Salem's answer, yes, I did. Lynn Stewart asked, did they know they were being taped? Mr. Emad Salem said no. This was a surprise to the judge, to the FBI, and to the world. They didn't know Emad Salem had been taping the FBI. The FBI did not know it. And then Lynn Stewart proceeded with the cross-examination. What did you tell them, Mr. Salem, about World Trade Center 1? Mr. Salem answered, I told them that the explosives that the guys had were going to go off. They were going to explode. Lynn Stewart, did the FBI say to you after getting that information? Emad Salem, they told me to shut my mouth. Lynn Stewart, question, they told you to shut your mouth? Mr. Emad Salem, answer, they told me to shut my mouth. And now enter Judge Mukasey, who was the judge on the case of the blind sheikh and the so-called, and I say that, the so-called landmarks case where people were supposedly planning to blow up landmarks in New York City, Mr. Judge Mukasey said, Lynn Stewart, I forbid you to proceed with this line of cross-examination because it is beyond the scope of this trial. Can you imagine? She's cross-examining a gentleman who told the FBI about World Trade Center 1 before it happened, and the judge says it's beyond the scope of the trial. Lynn Stewart's answer was, it is not beyond the scope of this trial because I'm cross-examining Mr. Emad Salem to find out the reliability or to go into his credibility as a witness. And the judge overruled her and said, you will not proceed with this line of questioning. And now we know this is the same judge, Judge Mukasey, who became the torture attorney general. When he became attorney general 10 years later, he had said that torture was not torture and that people accused should not have a trial. They should be treated as mental deviants and never have a trial. This is the judge who found Sheikh Omar Abdal guilty. Sheikh Omar Abdal Rahman was sentenced to 100 years, life plus 100 years, by Judge Mukasey, who refused to allow Lynn Stewart to tell the public to go in to the examination of cross-examination of Emad Salem, the witness against Sheikh Omar Abdal Rahman. And then later, they put Lynn Stewart in jail because she knew all about it. She has a mind that is photographic, and she can tell you step by step what happened in this and many other cases, so they want to silence her. This is why they said she had to go to jail immediately, even though she had an operation scheduled in a hospital in New York. The lawyer said, we can get it done in a hospital, in the prison. Don't worry about it. Go to jail. And she ended up 18 months later unable to sit up. And she finally got an operation. And the attending physician said it was the worst he had ever seen due to the delay. And when Lynn Stewart went into jail, the medicine they were giving her, suddenly Lynn Stewart couldn't get out of bed. She was ill. And she pleaded with her fellow inmates, don't let her sleep past the visit because she wanted to tell me something. And when I got in, you know, finally after fighting to get in, she told me they're trying to kill me. The medicine is terrible. Every time I take the medicine, I can't move. I can't get out of bed. I sleep forever. And our daughter, Lynn Stewart, and I have a daughter who's a doctor, a brilliant young woman. And she, you know, Lynn would tell me, because I couldn't take a piece of paper in to find out, she would tell me what they were giving her. And our daughter said, tell Lynn not to take anything. Refuse medicine because the medicine they're giving her is killing her. And I would go on a program in New York City called Taking Aim on BAI. Every week, once a week, I would name the doctors and I would say they are murdering Lynn Stewart in jail. And the doctor who had refused to tell our daughter what medicines they were giving, our daughter, the doctor, they refused to tell her what medicines they were giving her mother because of patient confidentiality. That doctor called my daughter and said, your father is going to ruin the reputation of this hospital that was right beside the prison and myself, and I will never be able to practice law or medicine. And our daughter said, tell me what you're giving my mother and he will stop it. And the doctor did tell my daughter what was happening, the attending physician, and Lynn got well quickly because only then did they listen to our daughter when I threatened and I used through radio programs such as yours, Reverend Pinckney, to force them to stop killing Lynn Stewart. And now they are killing Lynn Stewart in jail. She is dying of cancer, and they keep playing around with the papers. I'm talking about Eric Holder and President Obama. And as I say to people, you can't be on Lynn Stewart's side and on President Obama's side at the same time. They are different sides. And now we see another case. Well, it's just business as usual. Not to get involved until it happens to me. And it goes on and on and on and on until we stop it. So, Reverend Pinckney, when you go to talk about the TIs, mention Lynn Stewart, please. We're asking people to go to their representative, whoever it is, go to their minister, whoever it is, and say, why is it that no one can do anything to support those who support us? We all know Lynn Stewart was a lawyer, the people's lawyer. She has a reason, and she doesn't have a dime. They can't talk about money because Lynn Stewart is broke. She didn't spend money. There were no wild parties, etc. She was the people's lawyer. And they put her in jail because she exposed the American government. Obama is a part of it. Eric Holder is a part of it. So much so that the warden of the prison where Lynn is in Fort Worth, Texas, passed the compassionate release on to the federal government, and it stops at the federal government on Samuel's desk.
Wow. All right, Ralph. Hey, I really appreciate that, Ralph. You, once again, you know that we love Lynn Stewart. You know that she's our girl, and I'm going to be there in December to speak about it. And when I get a chance to go to the house, I'm going to make sure that I speak about Lynn. And matter of fact, I'm going to take several cases there. And just, you know, just yet, because, you know, Kanye's, I mean, if he can remember after we leave there, we'll be all right. Because, you know, he's 80 years old and a little bit absent-minded, but he do have give me an open door policy. So let's see what we can do. But on that
thank
note, Ralph, you got
very
about...
much, and I can go on forever, but I'm going to allow it and say thank you and allow you to go on with the great information you're giving to us. I'm going to look forward to seeing you in December. And I'm going to give you opportunity to speak before other groups. Now, they got to hear you. And
all right.
When you come to New York, and we can talk about a lot when you get here, but I'm going to call you after the program about other things. Thank
all
you
right.
so very much. Thank the listeners.
And Ralph, thank you for all the hard work you do. You are a true soldier, and I love you. And also, my first book has been completed, and it will be going to the publisher within the next 2 weeks, and I'm going to make sure I have a copy for you when I get there.
Fabulous. Have many copies because we should sell them at the event.
Absolutely. We'll do something. All right,
great.
Ralph. Take care of yourself. And now it's that time again. It's time for my TIs, the target individual. You have heard many stories about the TI. You heard about microwaving. You heard about laser. You heard it all. Our government, your government, the government that you love, the government that you say that will not do anything rotten, dirty, and evil to the people, but they're doing it. They're trying to control everybody. It's not just you. It's not just me. It's everybody. And they would do anything. Believe me, they will. Everybody is expendable, including your president. They care less about us. But listen, I got to bring in my good friend, Ken. He's a good guy. He's the John Brown. He's my friend, Ken Rose. Ken Rose, are you there?
Yes, I'm Reverend Pinckney, and thank you for the introduction. The first thing I want to talk about is the CPS. Because on this show, there's a lot of black people and also a lot of anybody's poor. The CPS, every year, to get their money for the next year, they got to increase their kidnapping by 10% or they don't get funding. The other day, a woman called in on a show and she talked about her and her husband. She was having a baby. So at the end, they give the husband a folder and told him, would you take this down to the front desk? Then they want to separate the mother and the father. Then they start questioning her. Well, how are you doing on money? She said, well, we don't have any money, but we're living with my in-laws, and they're helping us out. Next thing you know, the CPS comes in and grabs the kid. Now, the grandmother said, we can take care of the baby. Well, you're not on the list for child, you know, for child care to take care of these babies. And we got another family that's got 7 or 8 kids, and they got space for one more, and they'll do whatever we ask. Because once they get these kids, they get them on drugs, 7 different drugs, because the more drugs they get on, the more money they get, and they're experimenting on them. So if any of your listeners out there today, you've got a friend, a daughter, a granddaughter, a niece, you better inform them to keep their mouth shut when the nurses start asking them questions, or they'll end up with their kids gone. It's unbelievable. I'm surprised that our government doesn't, if you got kids under 10, they don't want to bring a social worker into your house to make sure they're taking all the drugs they're giving them. It's amazing to me they haven't done that yet. They probably will after I give them the idea. And now the next thing I want to...
Go ahead, Ken. You know, you are absolutely correct when you say you are not to speak to these people. What I teach people, do not talk to law enforcement about anything. If you talk to them, that's what they use to convict you. You see, they use your own words and add their words to make sure they get a conviction out of you. That's why I court watch every single day. There's not a day I don't go over there and sit and watch. And what I do, I write down everything so they can see me write down everything. I tell you, Ken, you are right on the money. Please, please do not talk to them, whatever you do, because they're not there to help you. Go ahead, Ken.
And especially the nurses. You know, you may go in the hospital thinking, oh, that nurse likes me. You know, she cares about my baby. No, she don't care about your baby. She's trained to have your baby taken away from you. So do not talk to the nurses. If they ask you if you got money, we're in good shape, and that's all you need to say to them.
That's right. You said the right word. That's all you need to say. You don't see no more. Hey, I will take care of my baby, and don't worry about my money unless you're going to give me some.
Right, exactly. Now I'm going to talk about Aaron and Alexis now, because that's been a pretty hot topic for all the TIs. And we got a human rights group, and you would think if you heard of a shooting in a Navy yard that you'd go in and check your computers to see if you got email, because when it sounds like a TI, it probably is a TI. And Aaron and Alexis was definitely being tortured, and he's also being monitored by the federal government. And it amazes me that nobody goes in when they hear about these kind of killings and checks their computer to see if they got a email from this guy or talk to him or anything. That's hard for me to believe, but that's the way it is. But anyway, this week I go on the Chief Kessler show every Monday and Friday. He's got 1 million listeners. I took Amy Anderson on with me because he said, Kenny, I want you to come in and talk about this issue of what they're doing, what you tell me they're doing. I said, okay. So I started talking. I said, you know, I brought a friend on. I'd like you to talk to her. She started reading off all the U.S. laws that go with these electronics. And then Pete Santelli is the sponsor of this show, and he's the co-host of it. He said, you know, I've been Googling up what you tell me. I'm so impressed and so amazed that I had no idea this was going on. He said, I'd like to get you on my show. Now, he's got 1.7 million people. So the next day, Amy went on his show, and she done a good job. I agree with 98% of what she said, but some things I don't agree with, but, you know, it was said, but she said it. So anyway, when he got through, he said, I think this is probably the most important show that I've ever hosted while I've been in radio. To me, that showed that we made a lot of ground. In other words, in 2 days, we got to 3 million people got to hear our story. I thought it was excellent. Then he comes on, he tells the girl that's helping him, co-host, he says, you remember a few months ago I told you I felt weird, and all of a sudden it felt like my body was heating up all over and I wanted to climb out? She says, yeah, I remember that. He says, I wonder if they're hitting me with that technology. Finally, people are waking up. This is the most evil thing that our government and other citizens are involved in. They better start thinking about what they're involved in, because while you're doing it to TIs, they're also having somebody do it to you, but on a more subtle note, where you don't even notice it.
Wow, that's amazing. And Ken, remember this, you know, a lot of times people don't know what it is. That's why you need to start reading about target individuals. You need to know exactly what this government is doing. Don't put anything past this government, nothing. They would do anything. Everybody is expendable to them. Everybody could be used as a guinea pig. And remember this. We have to learn to stand up and fight together. Your issue is my issue, and my issue should be your issue. That's what I'm teaching the target individuals now. They just want to concentrate on this issue. That's why they don't really get no help. Now I got over four different groups of target individuals who I deal with, and I make sure that they understand your issue is my issue, and my issue better be your issue. Because you're not going to get all my help that I'm providing for you unless you reach out. Over a million, we're talking about maybe 5 million people have heard the story of the TI since he came on. And it's going to get bigger. We're going to start averaging 1 million a week. So we're going to be doing great. I'm looking forward to it. And as soon as we reach that plateau, Ken, we're going to take this thing to another level. But there's just some things we need to do, and we got to do it. But, Ken, on that note, I got to move on to Gloria. I got to bring Gloria in. You have any closing remarks?
No, just the first speaker you had. Why should the government buy anything from you when they can steal it from you? And that's exactly what it sounds like what they're doing. They got the judge and everybody else in their pocket. So they don't need to pay them people any money. We'll just steal it from you.
Absolutely. Then put you in jail.
Right,
and
who
going to challenge us? That's the question. Who are going to challenge the federal government? People, I'm going to tell you this. All my black brothers and sisters out there, stop being afraid of them. They'll beat up on me. They'll beat up on everybody. But when the government or law enforcement come, they run like they, you know, like they scared and afraid of them. And they'll say anything that they tell them. But I tell you, we got to stand up and fight this month. I got to move on, Ken. But listen,
okay.
We'll talk soon. And God bless you. You hang in there because you're the John Brown of this world. Just take care of yourself and be careful. All right. Now it's time for my good friend Gloria. Gloria from Philadelphia. How you doing today?
Reverend Pinckney, I'm doing wonderful today. I was with my grandchildren this weekend. I went to a trade show with my daughter on Saturday morning. Life is good. I do have my bumps and bruises, but that's okay.
Hey, well, how you say roll with the punch, young lady?
Roll with the punches. What everyone was saying today, it is, I know we're headed in the right direction because the Creator is pushing everything together. What I have selected is once again from Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. And this is a descriptive introduction of the silent weapon. Everything is expected from an ordinary weapon is expected from a silent weapon by its creators, but only in its own manner of functioning. It shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing instead of chemical reaction or explosion, originating from bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder, from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. It makes no obvious explosive noises, causes no obvious physical or mental injuries, and does not obviously interfere with anyone's daily social life. Yet it makes an unmistakable noise, causes unmistakable physical and mental damage, and unmistakably interferes with the daily social life, i.e., unmistakable to a trained observer, one who knows what to look for. The public cannot comprehend this weapon and therefore cannot believe that they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but it's because of the technical nature of the silent weapon. They cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help and do not know how to associate with others to defend themselves against it. When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts, adapts to its presence, and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives until the pressure, psychological via economic, becomes too great and they crack up. Therefore, the silent weapon is a type of biological warfare. It attacks the virility, options, and the mobility of the individuals of a society by knowing, understanding, manipulating, and attacking their sources of natural and social energy and their physical, mental, and emotional strengths and weaknesses. And this week, I'm asking our audience if they will take time and look up artificial telepathy, and they will have a better understanding of what I just read about a silent war, because it's taking place, as I heard before on this show, right at your front door. So don't open the door until you read artificial telepathy. Thank you for listening.
Gloria, that is really tremendous. And, you know, next week, if you get a chance, can you get a list of some of the things, how you will feel when they are microwaving you? So, because a lot of people that's listening, we have a lot of new listeners now, that even some TIs who may not know exactly the feel when their body gets all warm and they can't sleep at night and all kind of things be turning about. If you could do that for me next week, just get a short list to read with whatever else you might have that you want to read for me, that would be wonderful. And, I really appreciate you. My friend David Laurie told me that you was on his show and you did a magnificent job. And I really, really appreciate that. You just keep up the good work. You hear?
Yes, I hear you. Thank you.
That's right. Hey, and how you say, I just love it. Just keep up the good work, Gloria. Love you, too, and take care of yourself and keep an eye on yourself because you know they're out there.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Breathe
now, it's that time again. It's time for my good friend, Dorothy. Dorothy is, she's been a victim. I don't know. I really don't like to use that word victim, but she's been involved. She's also, I would say a TI, but she might want to clarify that herself. She was in the service, and she really got a story to tell. Dorothy, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. How are you?
Great. How are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there. And I appreciate your kindness. I probably have been in the mix in a lot of different ways, but before I get a little bit into my story, I want to share some information. I've just gotten an email with a video attached showing the fact that, and please, anyone who has a modern car, that is more computerized cars, pay attention because there is a video out that shows that your car can be remotely manipulated and taken over, hacked into, because it's nothing more than a large computer. So if you think about the Toyota cars that were crashed probably 8 to 10 years ago, that's what was probably going on. The more computers we have, the more likely the possibility of them being hacked and crashed. So, again, pay attention. I'll see about getting this video to Reverend Pinckney so everybody can watch it. But they're actually talking that this is a technology developed by DARPA, which is a defense organization for research. I also have a video that talks about there's a new almost palm-size box that a person can walk past your electronic doors and within 18 seconds can open any car door and steal you blind. Sadly, I had this happen to me throughout the many years, well over 20 years now, of having to deal with standing up against not just the Catholic Church rape. And I guess I want to kind of pose a question, because I think it's important to pose a question. Stephen Hawking says, develop a theory, then use your observation, and then deliver the facts. And when you deliver the evidence, then that is scientific proof of what has happened. So for any listener who might be older than, let's say, 30 or 40, many people can go out and find out the critical times in the 1960s when the Soviet Union brought missiles to Cuba. And that nearly put us into a war scenario. We were on the verge of war. And the tragedy of that event is the fact that they had to literally hold their breath, and the country held its breath of whether or not we would be attacked by the Russians through Cuba. And now please know, those are two foreign nations that were posed to attack us at our door. And yet we have, and please hear what I'm about to say, because this is not against any good, decent Catholic, but when a foreign power such as the Vatican was allowed to rape the children of America, for well over 38 years, in which the Pope, Benedict, got immunity. Now, we're talking, there is a billion children, or a billion adults and children in the Catholic Church. And there is well over, in the last census, 310 million Americans, 310 million. We're talking for 38 years, there have been hundreds of thousands of American children who were allowed to be raped and tortured over their entire time frame of their life. And when a child is brutalized, what happens is they no longer can understand the world 100% as whole. Their safety has collapsed, and whether or not they were raped in their homes by a sibling, a parent, or anybody invited into their home, because when somebody like a priest or a police officer, a neighbor, or whoever is invited by the parents into the home, that child gives 100% trust to that person because the parents invited them in. So when those children have been brutalized, they have been manipulated throughout their entire life, and in fact, those children have ended up being put in horrific situations in their lives. They didn't get their free will and free choice to be who they were supposed to be. They weren't allowed to have their divine right, that which was given by God to that child, to be whole, secure, safe, to be who they're supposed to be on this planet. And instead, they were manipulated throughout their life, put into positions where they were going to be brutalized, and that could be anything from being systematically programmed to become a killer, systematically abused to become a person on the street for sex, in any of our entertainment industry, whether or not professional sports, they have lots of forced people who are in sexual enslavement there, or even in our federal government. But we have people in this country, and it's not just the Catholics, because in 1985, and again, please hear me, it is not the good and decent people who would never overstep the boundaries who are evangelicals, but in 1985, the evangelicals were given permission to go ahead and abuse their children because the idea was they were using mind control, that which was the altering abuse, sexual, psychological, or physical abuse, with the overlapping technological abuses that Reverend Pinckney's other folks have been talking about, to deny good and decent citizens their rights to be free from abuse. That's what we believe our government was supposed to be. And yet, MKUltra was a product from Operation Paperclip that came out of Nazi Germany and came to the United States through the CIA doctors that then allowed for the rape and brutalization of many, many children. And you can go out and look on your internet, on YouTube videos. Look up MKUltra. Look up Nazi Hitler, Germany, and abuse. It's all out there, folks. And the issue is that when good, decent people, now we're talking children that organize kids to go around and sing Christmas carols. They were the ones that would deliver papers. They were the ones that would shovel the snow and not rip off your neighbors. They were the ones that when windows were broken by a thrown apple to a tree trying to get down other trees, apples out of the orchard, instead of running off and letting that homeowner have to pay for it themselves, these were the kids that would go to the door and knock on the door and said, oops, we broke your door or we broke your window. Can we pay for it? That is what I have witnessed in my life, is being a good and decent child. And yet, according to the AMMACH Project, that's AMMACH Project from the United Kingdom, Kathy Morgan and Wynne Creech both speak that the Catholics, having abused and tortured their children for decades, for centuries, knew exactly how the human brain forms, to know exactly how to manipulate, control, and force a child to do something they would never want to do. These children are the ones that are now being used as false flags, as victims of crime, when in fact they are in fact victims of crime, yet they're then being put out there to be perceived as the abusers. Now, we have to step up on this issue because, please know, I am not a person who's interested in hurting anybody. And yet in my lifetime, and I'm speaking for all of us, because every child on this planet has a right to not be raped. Every child on this planet has a right to not be brutalized, manipulated, and controlled by others to then force them to do something criminal. That's entrapment, folks, because they know how to manipulate their behavior. I am a survivor of that, and I witness that as a honorable, serving, good and decent captain in the United States military, where I stood up against the thieving of your money, the putting in bad products to put your children at risk, intentionally at risk, by military leaders who didn't care about the lives of our military members. Now, you have to ask yourself, what was the U.S. military supposed to be for? We're supposed to be defending and protecting each other to make sure that we are here to protect and defend all good Americans, not protect the criminals, not protect the thieves, not protect those who are willing to rape, murder, and brutalize and harm others and then stand back. And the criminals that broke these kids, these adult children, are laughing and watching using this technology, which was paid for by your tax dollars. They're laughing at you because you're not willing to wake up and step up and say, enough. My life has value. Your life has value. These criminals' lives, sadly, has value. Many of them have chosen to go the wrong path, and I'm calling them to come back because the difference between me and them, I'm not willing to hurt another person. They've decided because coercion, force, or abuse at somebody else's hands, it's time for them to step up, turn around, and if they have to go back two or three generations, go dig up somebody who hurt them up. Go dig up and piss on those people's graves that hurt them. But it's time to stop being criminal bullies, because that's who these people are. They're organized criminal trauma networks. And we do not deserve, any of us, deserve to be labeled as mentally ill. We are not mentally ill. The criminals are the ones who are crazy lunatics, and they don't have a problem taking out anybody in this country, in this world, who's a good and decent person. And your children and your grandchildren are now at risk. It is time to begin to wake up. Not just wake up, it's time to step up. Thank you for listening.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much, Dorothy. That, you know, you know, I know what you've been through. I know what the Army did. I know about your life, you know.
Air Force.
Being sexually abused most of your life and even being in the service and being abused sexually, I tell you, it's a lot of trauma there. But listen, you know that if nobody else in this world love you, Reverend Pinckney love you, and I want you to keep up the great work, and you're doing a tremendous job just spreading the word, and just stay strong.
Yes, sir.
All right. On that note, I got to bring in my good friend Mary. Mary, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney, and what an exciting show you had today. I really enjoyed hearing again about RRP6, six executives of a software development company who basically, it seems to me, were incarcerated. They were raided and incarcerated after presenting to the federal government their ideas to revolutionize communication between Homeland Security and law enforcement, which is something that we all, as Americans, heard after 9/11 was what was needed. They developed it, and they went in to talk to the feds about it, and the next thing they knew, the FBI was raiding them, and they have been incarcerated on something totally unrelated, which is their bills with temporary services. So this, to a lot of people that I told about this, Reverend Pinckney, people say, oh, that's another Tulsa Wall Street situation. They just wanted to steal their invention. And so that's the general sense that people have about this when they hear about it. So it seems to me that there may be some validity in that. And then for the judge to withhold 200 pages of their original trial transcript when they are in the appeals process, that is just dirty. That's beyond illegal. I don't know whether it's legal or not for judges to withhold part of someone's original trial transcript, but whether it's legal or not,
illegal.
A lot of stuff is legal, but it's dirty. So whether it's legal or not, that is just plain dirty. And I certainly hope that those six men will be freed and restored. Because, you know, you have freedom is one thing, but restorative justice usually involves money. It involves paying people. And that's a situation that we have so clearly in America. We have a number of people who look at African Americans, I call us Africans in America, who say, well, why should we pay reparations? How in the world should we pay for the things that our, you know, great-grandfathers and what have you did? Well, you know, don't look at what was done. Look at what's being done. Jim Crow is not over. This is Jim Crow. We are currently living in a Jim Crow society. And I just want to let you know right now, real quickly, the history of reparations payments. In 1990, the USA paid $1.6 billion, or $20,000 each, to Japanese Americans for being in concentration camps. In 1990, Austria paid $25 million to Holocaust survivors. That's the Jewish claims against Austria. In 1988, Canada paid 250,000 square miles of land to Indian and Eskimos. In 1968, Canada paid $230 million to the Japanese Canadians who they put in concentration camps. In 1986, the USA paid $32 million, and they signed the 1839 Treaty to the Ottawas of Michigan. In 1985, the USA paid $31 million to for the Chippewas of Wisconsin. In 1985, the USA paid $12.3 million to the Seminoles of Florida. In 1985, the USA paid $12.3 million to, the Seminoles of Florida. In 1985, the USA paid $105 million to the Sioux of South Dakota. In 1980, the USA paid $81 million to the Klamathis of Oregon. In 1971, the USA paid $1 billion plus 44 million acres of land to the Alaska Natives. That's a land settlement. In 1952, Germany paid $822 million to Holocaust survivors. That's the German-Jewish settlement. From 1865, when slavery supposedly ended, to the present day, the USA has paid zero, Z-E-R-O, to victims of slavery in the Jim Crow era, to the African-American black descendants. Zero. We got the only zero on that list, Reverend Pinkney. And the thing is that, you know, you don't pay money for something you're not sorry about. And you don't apologize. It's improper to apologize about policies that you intend to continue, that indeed you are continuing, and that you feel like you are justified in doing. So these empty-handed fake apologies that were delivered to Africans in America by the President of the United States when Clinton was president, and by the Congress, the U.S. Congress, I think that was in like 2008, I'm not sure, but it was around then, and then Senate followed suit sometime later. You got 400 or 500 years of raping people, killing people, working the snot out of people and their children, and got millions of them incarcerated right now or in line waiting for incarceration. In Georgia, 1 out of 13 people is in the criminal justice system. And if you got 1 out of 13 in the whole state, you better believe a man blacks is 1 out of 3. So, you know, you're apologizing, but you're steadily doing it. And you brought empty-handed apologies only to Africans in America. Those are the only people who got empty-handed apologies. And that's because you're not sorry. If you were sorry for mistreating a people based on their race and ethnic origins, then you certainly wouldn't secretly arrest and murder mentally and physically disabled black men like my brother Larry Neal. You certainly wouldn't turn around and send COINTELPRO to stalk and censor a sister who asked you for records about that secret arrest and murder. So just admit that you are not sorry and you intend to continue doing it, this horrible racism. You practice it daily. You intend to continue it. Right now, IRP6, those six men, five of them are black, and you heard the gentleman say that the Caucasian was the only one who was not corralled into a cafeteria under armed guard, searched and degraded and dehumanized. And that was not in the 1800s. That was a few years ago. My brother wasn't secretly arrested and kept 18 days while police denied having him in the 1700s. That was 2003. The little Latino boy who was murdered by police playing with a play gun, that didn't happen 100 years ago. That happened a couple of weeks ago. So these people are not sorry, and that is the reason why it is so ridiculous to them, the prospect of paying for what they did wrong. If you have not really acknowledged that the way you're acting is wrong, then you do not want to back up your apology with any compensation. So that is the simple truth. I don't think that asking for reparations will make a difference, because I don't think that there will ever be any reparations for Africans in America. I don't really believe it will ever happen, but I believe that it behooves everyone who has a voice on radio, in journalism, in government. I believe it behooves everyone who cares about justice and righteousness to at least say that reparations are due. When you have bombed their nation, you have enslaved them for hundreds of years, you have taken their life, their liberty, their property, you've taken their children, you have disrupted whole communities long after slavery was over, as you did in Rosewood and as you did in Tulsa, and after Tulsa and Rosewood and all those situations, you learn, hey, we're not going to wait until they get a whole city set up. We're going to start disrupting them at the point that someone steps up and has the propensity to be a leader. We're gonna get them in the beginning. So that started being the new modus operandi. They started attacking people at the initial point where they had the nerve to step up to the plate and say this is wrong or that is wrong, and come and let's do things differently. That is why you went to prison, Reverend Pinckney, because you stood up and you pointed out in the name of God what was wrong. And they put you in prison because you utilize your freedom of speech to condemn what is wrong. And then when you said that people are cursed for what they do wrong, which is what Deuteronomy said, you were incarcerated. Even after you were released from prison, you were incarcerated in your own household because you continued free speech. That is why Lynn Stewart is in prison. Lynn Stewart, after she got her initial sentence, which I understand as being only 18 months, they were concerned because she continued to go to college campuses and speak to young people who were in law schools about the need to have justice, real justice, and they didn't like that. So, you know, the situation is that they don't want to wait until another Rosewood is built or another Wall Street, Tulsa Wall Street is built. People are attacked now, individually and certainly collectively, at the point that they begin to use their voice to say, there's a better way. Let's really be about freedom and justice for all. Let's correct these problems. And so I think that it's important for everyone who cares, and not just Africans in America, but it's important for everyone who cares about real justice to recognize the importance of restorative justice and to call for reparations. And while we're talking about money, I would like for everyone to know that we appreciate you tuning in to the Reverend Pinckney Show every Sunday. We appreciate the fact that you share the links to these shows, and you share them with your friends and your neighbors online. We appreciate you doing that. That's wonderful, and that's a great start. Reverend Pinckney has announced that he had 700,000 listeners to one of his shows in October, counting those who listen live as well as those who listen to the archive tape. Now, you're listening, and we appreciate that. You're hearing things that you want to hear. And the thing is that some of you might disagree with what you're hearing, but you're listening, and that's important, and we thank you for that. But we're talking about money now, and it's important for you, if you support this ministry, and it is a ministry because God said in Proverbs 31:8-9, God said that we should speak up for those who are poor. We should speak up for those who are needy, and we should speak up for everyone who is appointed to destruction. So this is God's work. This is God's ministry, and you should support it. You should send donations. And also, Reverend Pinckney and I are discussing opportunities for people to advertise on the Reverend Pinckney Show every Sunday. If you have a product that you want 700,000 people to be to know about, if you have a product that Reverend Pinckney said he intends for the audience to get to be roughly 1 million before Christmas, and don't just think about the ones who are listening right now live. Consider the ones who are going to be listening to all the archive tapes that we send and that people are steadily sending out and sharing with their friends and neighbors. If you want to be advertised on the Reverend Pinckney Show, that is something that is something that is being worked out. And we appreciate you. We appreciate you thinking of the Reverend Pinckney Show when you want to advertise your holiday festivals, your celebrations at your churches, your I'm Mary Neal. I'm the Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. You want to advertise your care homes. You want to advertise your reentry programs. We want to do responsible advertising, things that will help the community. If you're a lawyer and you want to advertise your criminal defense, you want to be able to help these people who are being railroaded into prison, mostly because of their skin color. I also want to say, Reverend Pinckney, are you there?
Well, yeah, I'm still here, but listen.
Okay.
Right. Look, I really appreciate all that, but I got to move on. I got Dr. Short on there.
But I just want to say that we were very disappointed that the Supreme Court there in New York, the appellate court, they went back and reversed the judge's ruling on stop and frisk. The judge had ruled stop and frisk to be unconstitutional, and the U.S. appellate court there in New York City, not only did they reverse that, but they also got rid of the judge.
Absolutely.
Okay? So they're
Mary,
saying that
move,
it's perfectly
gotta move on,
to
Mary.
Target people.
I got to move on.
To target people, according to their race. So they're
all right,
not sorry,
thanks,
they're
Mary.
Still doing it, and we thank you.
All right. I got to bring in Roz. Roz, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm blessed to be here, and I thank you, and I want everybody to remember how special they are to God, and that He is with us, and He is our Savior, and our Father, and our Helper as we go through all these issues in our life. So let's cling to the Lord, because He is there for us. But today I wanted to talk about LAUSD spending the construction money on iPads while the schools crumble, and it's one of the worst school districts in the country. They have a pattern of abuse and violence and horrific injuries and death, like Charles Smith died, because they don't care. They're too busy with their sweet deals and paying off doctors and lawyers and deals with judges. So we need to stand up for our children in the schools, the students. I don't hear anybody screaming and yelling. They gave Dr. Deasy a contract extension. They all met the school board, LAUSD school board. They met in closed session. They gave him an extension on the contract. Well, don't you all think that it is so corrupt that they're all in it together? Somebody must have got a kickback from this. We're not stupid. We get it. But we must save the students, for they're our future. We cannot take away their education. This goes on across the country. And please join me in my new endeavor, my new group, Justice Now for Injured Workers. And we are helping the students and the teachers to save their lives, so they don't lose their homes, they don't lose their health, they don't lose their families. This I find absolutely unconscionable behavior. Please contact me at RozyWow, RozyWow, at AOL.com, RozyWow, at AOL.com. And when Sam was talking about the court system, I certainly know how they lost my papers and my testimony and how corrupt it is. And all of us, if it's not happening to you today, as Reverend Pinckney says, it's going to happen to you tomorrow. We must unite together no matter what color we are, what political party we're from, and we need to save ourselves and our future.
Hey, I really, you know what, Rod, I really, really appreciate that because, you know, you're right on point. Next week we're going to be talking about the Common Core, which I think people need to know about because right now we're behind time. We need to fight together. When will we learn? You know, we can't wait until something happened to us and then want to fight. It's too late. We have to be prepared to fight before this thing happened. And I tell you, I'm one of the few guys that ever won my case. Yes, I was sent to jail, and it was overturned by the appeal court, which we knew it would be. But the point was, we have to learn to fight together. People rally around me and to help. But, Rob, you got about 60 seconds to say what you want, and I got to let Sam come in, and I'm going to let Dr. Short close us out. Go right ahead.
Okay, we all have to stand up together, stop being judgmental, lead in the Lord's love and caring and support, and thank you for everything. You're all in my prayers, but the Lord, God is the answer for all this, and thank you always for your prayers, or I wouldn't have made it. So God bless you. God bless Reverend Pinckney. God bless everyone who comes on, and we thank you. It's such a beautiful program. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney.
And thank you, Rob, for being so patient with me because I tell you, you know, you've been waiting, but I always like to bring you at the end. And I don't have a lot of time, but you know how I feel about you.
Oh, yeah, I do. And, Dorothy, I want to say to Dorothy, we love Dorothy. She's a special lady. She was a veteran. She was there in the trenches, and we just love her. And we pray for peace and healing for her, for everybody who's listening, too.
She deserves it. All
right,
now listen, you have a good day, and I will talk to you soon.
Yes, you will, definitely. And it's wonderful being 21, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like a baby myself. You know, a beautiful birthday. I had a wonderful birthday. I got over 1,000 emails, people wishing me a happy birthday, and I appreciate that. That's really, really wonderful. Thank you, but I got to bring Sam on. Sam, I got to bring you on, and you got 90 seconds to say whatever you want, whatever website you want to put out there, just say it.
Hey, Reverend Pinckney, I appreciate it again for you having me on and to represent the IRP6, and folks can find out more information about the IRP6 by going to www.freetheirp6.org. You can get involved by reaching us at justcause@a-justcause.com, or you can call us at 855-529-4252. You know, Reverend Pinckney, back in August of this year, Attorney General Eric Holder spoke to the American Bar Association, and he highlighted the fact that, you know, the federal prisons right now are operating at nearly 40% above capacity, and that the prosecutors are prosecuting people for no good law enforcement reason. Those are the kind of things that we as a Just Cause and your organization and other organizations that are seeking reforms in the judicial process, we need to highlight that kind of thing. I mean, the United States comprises only 5% of the world's population, yet we incarcerate almost 25% of the world's prisoners. And, you know, when you talk about the racial disparity there, you know, African Americans get nearly 20% longer sentences than their counterparts. So, you know, those kind of things, we need to bring about reforms in the judicial process. And so we just ask folks, as you've been highlighting throughout your show, you know, if you don't get involved, then you're just standing by and watching an injustice be carried out. So folks need to get involved. Just because it's not affecting you today does not necessarily mean that it's not going to affect you or someone that you love. And so please support the IRP6. Again, we have a phone campaign going as far as calling out to Eric Holder's office. That phone number is listed on our website as well. And so we would just love that support for folks to get involved. Thanks
and
again for having
Sam,
us on.
We want to keep drilling these people until they get the message. Because sometimes people do not understand stuff until something happened to them direct. It can happen to a member of their family, and they still don't care. But I tell you one thing, Sam, every week you can have another member of your group or you come on, and, you know, we'll give you about 10 minutes to say whatever you want to say because I think that this is important. And here's the thing, too, Sam. What I do, I court watch every day. I go to that courthouse every single day, and I make sure. And they have enough respect for me around it to understand when I'm there, they better do right. And I think that might be something that you might want to, you know, people that has the time, especially your church members, the senior citizens, get them inside the courthouse and start writing. See, this is what they don't want you to set up a paper trail. And we need to do this all over the country. And one of the things that we did behind this, with the court-appointed attorney, we won the case all the way to the Supreme Court, and then they sent it back down to the lower court. And what they did, they got it on hold. We're challenging the court-appointed attorney. So that's what we're doing right now. But, Sam, I got to leave you. I got to bring in the very, very last caller that I could bring in. I know we have right now, we have overlooked. The board is so full, it's hard to get through to everybody, and I do apologize. But usually when people call me and let me know, I can always let you know that, you know, I can bring you in. But Sam, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And we're going to get the word out, and we're going to do whatever we can to help you. But I got to leave you, Sam.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me give that Eric Holder's phone number real quick, 202-514-2003, 202-514-2003. Entice and push Eric Holder to get those 200 pages of missing transcript for the IRP6. Thank you very much, Reverend Pinckney.
All right, we're going to work on that together. My friend, Dr. Short, I am so sorry. I know you came on too late, but you're there. But listen, you got about 2 minutes to say whatever your heart desires.
Well, Reverend Pinckney, I want to say that for Eric Holder, they need to give the emails. They need to crash the entire Justice Department server. That will get their attention. They can ignore the calls.
Absolutely. And we got to get all these people listening and everybody doing things, but they're not doing anything. My mind cannot compute that.
Well, I can. They're all looking at porn all day while other people go to jail. Now, you know what? When they can't look at the little filthy stuff on their computer, they're going to want to know why. That's where their hearts are. So that's it. Reverend Pinckney, I just want to mention to you that our HBCUs are dying under President Obama and his little hypocritical friend, you know, our favorite guy, Ben Jealous, wrote an article, and it upset me because I don't want to believe it, but if Ben Jealous and I are related, I'm going to be so angry. I'm related to Obama.
No, I'm going to be mad, too. You're not the only one going to be angry.
But you know, Ben Jealous's grandfather, great-grandfather, started St. Paul's College, which closed its doors this summer. That's where many people in my family from the 1880s until recently, in fact, my cousin was on the board of trustees of St. Paul's College. Now, do you know when Ben Jealous wrote his article, he complained about the Department of Education not supporting HBCUs, but who appointed the head of the Department of Education? Who's running the Department of Education with all these schools closing? Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't even be honest if he cared anything about his family legacy. I'm talking about you, Ben Jealous. You would have said, hey, Obama, save my folks' school. And he probably didn't do it. And these are the kind of sorry leaders that we have. And so we really have to stand up. All the HBCUs are in trouble across the country. ITC was in trouble a few years ago. Morehouse is having money problems. We're not going to have anything. And so, you know, we really need to wake up. And I'm going to say one other thing, and I'm going to stop. I want everybody that's thinking, that has access to a computer, to go and look up Christian Zionism. It's hijacked Christianity. We got folks saving old people in Russia and can't do anything to stop euthanasia in America. Christian Zionism is a curse on the church. The only cause that people are concerned about is fighting for Israel, and yet all the wars that America fights, there's this thing called this big dog theory, where they are deliberately destroying this country through all the wars. And all the wars were fighting to back up Israel. And I thought Christianity was a religion of peace. Yet you look at Reverend Hagee, the little fat dude that looks like he's going to have a heart attack.
I know he's talking about. But listen, I look, you come on earlier next week, and I'll get you in there so you can give us this. But
we need to have a discussion on that, though.
Yeah, we need to talk about that. We need to talk a little bit about Hagee. I know. But look, we don't really have any more time, and I got to cut off. But you can take 30 seconds and say whatever you want. And after that, it's all over the shout. Remember, 30 seconds, because when the music starts playing, it's all over. Go ahead.
Cool.
You?
Everybody, look up Christian Zionism. Study it, because that's something we need to save our churches from, these thugs and mega preacher pimps.
All right, my man. Listen, we will be back next week, same time, same station.
All right. No
this
problem.
Year alone, including all the blogs and everything, we have over 800 million people have listened to this show. So we have to stay focused, get the word out, do what we need to do, and let's stay forward. I now have a set of four sets of TIs now. My goal is to get them all and to make sure that they understand how important this is. On that note, I'm going to have to say let's listen to a little Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Don't push that door. Stop using the door. Every day, teach every day.